Chapter 46. Archer had declined. "He'll stick together," he said, and May's face had brightened at his setting such a good example to Dallas. Since her death, nearly 2 years before, there had been no reason for his continuing in the same routine. His children had urged him to travel. Mary Chivers had felt sure it would do him good to go abroad and see the galleries. The very mysteriousness of such a cure made her the more confident of its efficacy. But Archer had found himself held fast by habit, by memories, by a sudden startled shrinking from new things. Now, as he reviewed his past, he saw into what a deep rut he had sunk. The worst of doing one's duty was that it apparently unfitted one for doing anything else. At least that was the view that the men of his generation had taken. The trenchant divisions between right and wrong, honest and dishonest, respectable and the reverse, had left so little scope for the unforeseen. There are moments when a man's imagination, so easily subdued to what it lives in, suddenly rises above its daily level and surveys the long windings of destiny. Archer hung there and wondered. What was left of the little world he had grown up in, and whose standards had bent and bound him? He remembered a sneering prophecy of poor Lawrence Lefferts, uttered years ago in that very room. "If things go on at this rate, our children will be marrying Beaufort's bastards." It was just what Archer's eldest son, the pride of his life, was doing, and nobody wondered or approved. Even the boys and Janie, who still looked so exactly as she used to in her elderly youth, had taken her mother's emeralds and seed pearls out of their pink cotton wool, and carried them with her own twitching hands to the future bride. And Fanny Beaufort, instead of looking disappointed at not receiving a yet from a Paris jeweler, had exclaimed at their old-fashioned beauty, and declared that when she wore them, she should feel like an Isabey miniature. Fanny Beaufort, who had appeared in New York at 18, after the death of her parents, had won its heart much as Madame Olenska had won it 30 years earlier, only instead of being distrustful and afraid of her, society took her joyfully for granted. She was pretty, amusing and accomplished. What more did anyone want? Nobody was narrow-minded enough to rake up against her the half-forgotten facts of her father's past and her own origin. Only the older people remembered so obscure an incident in the business life of New York as Beaufort's failure, or the fact that after his wife's death he had been quietly married to the notorious Fanny Ring, and had left the country with his new wife, and a little girl who inherited her beauty. He was subsequently heard of in Constantinople, then in Russia, and a dozen years later American travelers were handsomely entertained by him in Buenos Aires, where he represented a large insurance agency. He and his wife died there in the odor of prosperity, and one day their orphan daughter had appeared in New York in charge of May Archer's sister-in-law, Mrs. Jack Welland, whose husband had been appointed the girl's guardian. The fact threw her into almost cousinly relationship with Newland Archer's children, and nobody was surprised when Dallas's engagement was announced. Nothing could more dearly give the measure of the distance that the world had traveled. People nowadays were too busy with reforms and ovements, with fads and fetishes and frivolities, to bother much about their neighbors. And of what account was anybody's past, in the huge kaleidoscope, where all the social atoms spun around on the same plane? Newland Archer, looking out of his hotel window at the stately gaiety of the Paris streets, felt his heart beating with the confusion and eagerness of youth. It was long since it had thus plunged and reared under his widening waistcoat, leaving him, the next minute, with an empty breast and hot temples. He wondered if it was thus that his sons conducted itself in the presence of Miss Fanny Beaufort and decided that it was not. Tea functions as actively, no doubt, but the rhythm is different, he reflected, recalling the cool composure with which the young man had announced his engagement, and taken for granted that his family would approve. The difference is that these young people take it for granted that they're going to get whatever they want, and that we almost always took it for granted that we shouldn't. only, I wonder the thing one's so certain of in advance. Can it ever make one's heart beat as wildly? It was the day after their arrival in Paris, and the spring sunshine held Archer in his open window, above the white silvery prospect of the Place Vendôme. One of the things he had stipulated, almost the only one, when he had agreed to come abroad with Dallas, was that, in Paris, he shouldn't be made to go to one of the newfangled places. Oh, all right, of course, Dallas good-naturedly agreed. I'll take you to some jolly old-fashioned place, the Bristol say, leaving his father speechless at hearing that the century-long home of kings and emperors was now spoken of as an old-fashioned inn, where one went for its quaint inconveniences and lingering local color. Archer had pictured often enough, in the first impatient years, the scene of his return to Paris. Then the personal vision had faded, and he had simply tried to see the city as the setting of Madame Olenska's life. Sitting alone at night in his library, after the household had gone to bed, he had evoked the radiant outbreak of spring down the avenues of horse chestnuts, the flowers and statues in the public gardens, the whiff of lilacs from the flower carts, the majestic roll of the river under the great bridges, and the life of art and study and pleasure that filled each mighty artery to bursting. Now the spectacle was before him in its glory, and as he looked out on it he felt shy, old-fashioned, inadequate. A mere gray speck of a man compared with the ruthless magnificent fellow he had dreamed of being. Dallas's hand came down cheerily on his shoulder. Hello, father. This is something like, isn't it? They stood for a while looking out in silence, and then the young man continued. By the way, I've got a message for you. The Countess Olenska expects us both at 5:30. He said it lightly, carelessly, as he might have imparted any casual item of information, such as the hour at which their train was to leave for Florence the next evening. Archer looked at him, and thought he saw in his gay young eyes a gleam of his great-grandmother Mingott's malice. Oh, didn't I tell you? Dallas pursued. Annie made me swear to do three things, while I was in Paris. Get her the score of the last Debussy songs, go to the Grand Guignol, and see Madame Olenska. You know she was awfully good to Fanny, when Mr. Beaufort sent her over from Buenos Aires to the Assomption. Fanny hadn't any friends in Paris, and Madame Olenska used to be kind to her, and trot her about on holidays. I believe she was a great friend of the first Mrs. Beaufort's. And she's our cousin, of course. So I rang her up this morning, before I went out, and told her you and I were here for 2 days and wanted to see her. Archer continued to stare at him. Who told her I was here? Of course, why not? Dallas's eyebrows went up whimsically. Then, getting no answer, he slipped his arm through his father's with a confidential pressure. I say, father, what was she like? Archer felt his color rise under his son's unabashed gaze. Own up. You and she were great pals, weren't you? Wasn't she most awfully lovely? Lovely? I don't know. She was different. Ah, there you have it. That's what it always comes to, doesn't it? When she comes, she's different and one doesn't know why. It's exactly what I feel about Fanny. His father drew back a step, releasing his arm. About Fanny? But, my dear fellow, I should hope so. Only I don't see, dash it, Dad, don't be prehistoric. Wasn't she once your Fanny? Dallas belonged body and soul to the new generation. He was the firstborn of Newland and May Archer, yet it had never been possible to inculcate in him even the rudiments of reserve. That's the use of making mysteries? It only makes people want to nose him out, he always objected when enjoined to discretion. But Archer, meeting his eyes, saw the filial light under their banter. My Fanny? Well, the woman you'd have chucked everything for. Only you didn't, continued his surprising son. I didn't, echoed Archer with a kind of solemnity. No. You date, you see, dear old boy. But mother said, your mother? Yes. The day before she died. It was when she sent for me alone, you remember? She said she knew we were safe with you, and always would be, because once, when she asked you to, you'd given up the thing you most wanted. Archer received this strange communication in silence. His eyes remained unseeingly fixed on the thronged sunlit square below the window. At length he said in a low voice, "He never asked me." "No. I forgot. You never did ask each other anything, did you? And you never told each other anything. You just sat and watched each other and guessed at what was going on underneath. A deaf and dumb asylum, in fact. Well, I back your generation for knowing more about each other's private thoughts than we ever have time to find out about our own. I say, Dad," Dallas broke off, "you're not angry with me? If you are, let's make it up and go and lunch at Henry's. I've got to rush out to Versailles afterward." Archer did not accompany his son to Versailles. He preferred to spend the afternoon in solitary roamings through Paris. He had to deal all at once with the packed regrets and stifled memories of an inarticulate lifetime. After a little while he did not regret Dallas's indiscretion. It seemed to take an iron band from his heart to know that, after all, someone had guessed and pitied. And that it should have been his wife moved him indescribably. Dallas, for all his affectionate insight, would not have understood that. To the boy, no doubt, the episode was only a pathetic instance of vain frustration, of wasted forces. But was it really no more? For a long time Archer sat on a bench in the Champs-Élysées and wondered, while the stream of life rolled by. A few streets away, a few hours away, Ellen Olenska waited. As he had never gone back to her husband, and when he had died, some years before, as he had made no change in her way of living. There was nothing now to keep her and Archer apart, and that afternoon he was to see her. He got up and walked across the Place de la Concorde and the Tuileries Gardens to the Louvre. As he had once told him that she often went there, and he had a fancy to spend the intervening time in a place where he could think of her as perhaps having lately been. For an hour or more he wandered from gallery to gallery through the dazzle of afternoon light, and one by one the pictures burst on him in their half-forgotten splendor, filling his soul with the long echoes of beauty. After all, his life had been too starved. Suddenly, before an effulgent Titian, he found himself saying, "But I'm only 57," and then he turned away. For such summer dreams it was too late, but surely not for a quiet harvest of friendship, of comradeship, in the blessed hush of her nearness. He went back to the hotel, where he and Dallas were to meet, and together they walked again across the Place de la Concorde, and over the bridge that leads to the Chamber of Deputies. Dallas, unconscious of what was going on in his father's mind, was talking excitedly and abundantly of Versailles. He had had but one previous glimpse of it, during a holiday trip in which he had tried to pack all the sights he had been deprived of when he had had to go with the family to Switzerland. And tumultuous enthusiasm and cocksure criticism tripped each other up on his lips. As Archer listened, his sense of inadequacy and inexpressiveness increased. The boy was not insensitive, he knew, but he had the facility and self-confidence that came of looking at fate not as a master, but as an equal. "That's it. They feel equal to things they know their way about," he mused, thinking of his son as the spokesman of the new generation which had swept away all the old landmarks, and with them the signposts and the danger signal. Suddenly Dallas stopped short, grasping his father's arm. "H, by Jove," he exclaimed. They had come out into the great tree-planted space before the Invalides. The dome of Mansart floated ethereally above the budding trees, and the long gray Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.